conversations around wellness and weight loss can be complicated. There's the Instagram filter we all see on IG and social media, and then IRL. And between $20 smoothies and daily ice baths, everyone is doing the most to hack the health system. But there's a better way. Row. Row provides access to the most popular weight loss shots on the market. Over 200,000 people have already chosen Row to help them lose weight. And you can sign up from the comfort of your own home. No scheduling a doctor's appointment, commute to the doctor's office, and no waiting rooms. The Row Body Program pairs a weekly shot with healthy lifestyle changes, so you can lose 15 to 20% of your weight in a year on average and actually keep it off. Of course, medication must be paired with diet and exercise modifications in order to achieve any stated results. Medication cost is not included in the program. Patients must pay for medication separately. With Row, average weight loss is 15 to 20% in 1 year with healthy lifestyle changes. BMI and other eligibility criteria apply. Go to row.co/andyscrolls. You can sign up today and you'll pay just $99 for your first month and $145 a month after that. Medication costs are separate. That's ro.co/andyscrolls. Sign up today. Spoiler alert, I watch a lot of Bravo, and when I'm not watching Bravo, I'm sitting in the cloth having a moment of spiritual growth, and when that's not happening, I'm living here in New York where there is a lot to do and not a lot of time to do it. The last thing that I want to be thinking about, let alone worrying about, is my hair. Now, I have wavy hair naturally. It also has color processing, which is surprising because I am a spiritual blonde. And as a result, I don't want to have to worry about frizz. That's why I love Way's anti-frizz cream. It works for my hair texture. It works for having wavy hair. It smells great. There are notes of bergamot, Italian lemon. You guys know I just went to Italy. It was for moments like this. Violet and more. Having used a lot of products in my hair in the past, I don't like a heavy feeling, especially when you have wavy hair. That's incredibly important, which is why I love the anti-frizz cream. It makes my hair look like me just a little bit better. Way's new anti-frizz cream provides immediate frizz control that lasts up to 72 hours. It helps reduce and repair split ends. And according to a consumer perception study, 90% of participants agreed that their hair looks less frizzy. And I would like to know what that consumer perception study has to say about some original cast members of The Real Housewives of New York. You'll be way obsessed with Way's bestsellers. They're leave-in conditioner, detox shampoo, hair oil, gloss, and so much more. Frizz-free up your schedule with Way. Go to theouai.com and enter promo code Andy for 15% off any product. That's theouai.com, promo code Andy. C'est bon.
I went to Electoral College and aced chemistry.
Trump's love tank is empty and he's driving to prison. That was my best work.
Oh my God. Oh my God. You guys, it's Andy Scrolls, episode 184. And I just realized I want to just see, well, I guess we'll get to it, but I just want to see if Vicky posted anything.
Oh my God.
I don't think she did, right? I'm looking at her social right now. No, she's selling sweats, looks like, on Instagram stories, and then she has a glass of wine from election night. Okay, guys, it's Andy's Girls. It's episode 184, and I'm so excited to be joined by none other than my Bravo bestie, assistant editor at Betches Media, co-host of the podcast Mention It All, creator of Bravo by Betches. It's none other than Dylan Hafer, registered voter.
Registered voter, yes. Thank you for having me back. It's been It's been a minute. I don't think Potomac was on yet the last time I was on Le Pod. So it's funny, like Potomac wasn't on and then now it's like the only show.
I mean, it is like the only show. Amen. And I'm so excited for us to have a second show next week with Salt Lake City so that we have two shows on the air. Just two wonderful shows.
I will say it's interesting because for my podcast, we do three episodes a week. And
oh, my God. Crazy.
So
crazy.
We mention it all, if you will.
Oh,
so. We are watching and talking about Orange County in a mindful way as much as possible. Mm-hmm. We're watching Southern Charm. We watch Below Deck. Like there's always like more shows, but it's like Potomac's the one that is like clearly the centerpiece right now. I draw the line.
Oh my God.
Totally. I draw the line. We don't watch or talk about what's
People?
It called? Don't Be Tardy.
Oh.
It was like a 10-second discussion of like, are we going to watch that? And I'm like, no, we're not.
No, it's honestly, I haven't watched Southern Charm, which I just don't like. I think they're all honestly all trash people. I may have it on just to like, but I don't think there's going to be anything there.
Yeah.
And I will totally watch Below Deck because I die for Captain Lee, but I just haven't watched it yet. Because we've had a week, Dylan Hafer. We've had a week. Who can concentrate?
Oh, we have had a week.
I just watched Potomac yesterday. Day? Is that true? Or I watched it the day before. I was very late on even watching Beloved RHOP because I just was like, really? Well, you know this because we text 24/7. I was very, very, very stressed out, as I know all of us were, or many of us were.
Yeah.
The people with pulses. And I just like, on election night was a, you know, we're recording this Sunday morning. We were going to record yesterday and things happened. We had to open some stuff. I just got very nervous. And I think you were the one who said it best when you were, I think it was you who was like, it's like you have 2016 PTSD because when stuff started going a certain way on election night, I thought, oh my God, it's happening again.
Right.
And I got really nervous. And even in our like DM thread with us and several of our other Bravoholic BFFs, there were people who were like, it's still going to happen. It could still happen for Joe. And I was like sort of a little bit of a negative Nelly because I just was so, I felt trapped.
Yeah.
Like I just felt like this is going to happen again. I need to sort of start dealing with it. To process it. But it was scary.
I think
it was really scary.
The thing is, in 2016... I think people were so confident and, you know, the polling was so confident and all of that and whatever. And it just went so wrong.
Yeah.
And so I think it felt irresponsible to feel too kind of positive this year and to feel comfortable and just to make assumptions. And, you know, fortunately by, you know, Wednesday morning, there were like trends that were emerging that seemed to make it clear that which way it was going to go, but it was still one of those things where because the counting took such a long time, it was like this delayed release of like, okay, like I know that this is like really most likely going to happen, but I don't want to allow myself this joy that then can be taken away.
Exactly.
Whereas if I'm just depressed all the time already, then whatever, I'm like 10% more depressed. But I kind of had not allowed myself to think that much about how it was going to feel for Joe to win. And so yesterday I was like hanging up something on my wall, had MSNBC on in the background. And like, they're talking about like, you know, numbers in some county in Pennsylvania. And then all of a sudden it's like the decision desk called it. And I literally was like, I like fell to the floor.
I was texting you saying, literally, I just need them to call it. But I think I was watching Brothers and Sisters. I 100% wasn't watching the news. And then you texted me right back and you said they just called it. And then, and I put this on Instagram, but then immediately, like literally within milliseconds, you could start to hear people screaming. Mm-hmm. And my window was closed in my bedroom, which I just realized is open now in case there's any kind of outside cheering. But I opened my window and it was just everyone was screaming and I started yelling and I was in the same nightie that I'm currently wearing. And I threw on like a little sweater over it because, you know, God bless America and my tits. and sort of just hustled out the door because I just immediately needed to be on the street. I just felt like in my bones I need to be outside with people. And I saw there was a lot of video of people going like wilding out in Brooklyn and downtown. And, you know, the Upper E, we were all just – everybody was cheering. We were all so excited. A woman across the street was hanging the flag out her window. I mean, it was just cars honking. I don't know how long I was outside. It felt like a while because it was just so wonderful to – connect with people, especially people I don't know, but also the joy. I mean, people were driving by, everybody, cars honking, literally everybody. People were hanging out of their cars, cheering. It was bliss. It felt like actual visceral bliss.
Well, I don't think I've ever, I can't think of another thing in our lifetimes that has felt like that feeling. Because it wasn't just, you know, if Hillary had won in 2016, we would have been happy. We would have been relieved. It would have been great, whatever. But the fact that the last 4 years have felt like such a long-term assault on everything that kind of is good and normal and, you know, how life is supposed to go and how our country is supposed to be. And, you know, the fact that the last 4 years felt so difficult in so many ways allowed this moment to be so much more impactful than you would normally have. Just like, oh, yay, like my candidate won the election. Like, good job. Like, it was such a like cathartic moment of just finally being able to exhale and, you know, feel that happiness.
I mean, the stakes couldn't have been higher for any moment, any election, presidential or otherwise, in our lifetime in 2016. And unfortunately, for many reasons, some of which were out of the voters' control, it didn't go our way. We lost and we suffered those consequences, and innocent people in marginalized communities suffered those consequences and will continue to suffer those consequences for generations to come. I mean, I had this conversation with my dad, I don't know how long ago, well before, you know, 2020 was amping up, where he's like, I hope you understand that this will ruin.
Right.
I mean, like the court decisions, SCOTUS, some executive decisions, there are consequences and damage that will continue to harm people for longer than we may be alive. I mean, it is entirely possible. And so I think for all of us to feel like we are getting back a piece of ourselves or feel like we are becoming people again cannot be overstated. And I also think as a white person, a white woman, I thought that justice would prevail in 2016. I was very, very nervous. After the second debate, I started freaking out and getting very, very nervous because it felt like people thought this was funny and I didn't see anything funny happening. And it felt like there was no bottom, that people were just, the media was giving him all the attention. There was no real pushback. It just felt in the ways in which I needed. And, you know, so watching election night in 2016 with my roommate, who's a Black woman, you know, I was really, really obviously upset. We both were, but, and I don't want to speak for her, but it is a different experience to believe in our system as truly just and be a white person thinking that than someone in our country who hasn't, by nature of the color of their skin, has been marginalized, mistreated, and knows enough to know that the system wasn't set up for her, you know? So it's, that has stayed with me for 4 years. And I have another roommate who is also a Black woman. And it's just a very different and eye-opening experience for me to understand my own privilege, like in the moment, at the worst possible moment for our country, to still understand that my devastation is like a window into being white. You know what I'm saying? Like my belief that I thought this country was, I thought we were better than this.
To have that inherent belief that the right thing will end up happening because that's how the world works. Like it is, you know, it's a viewpoint that comes from a place of privilege, I think. But at the same time, it's a good thing to be hopeful and it's a good thing to, you know, have that kind of motivation. But yeah, it's, I don't know. I'm so happy.
Well, we also both got drunk. So we were going to record yesterday and then the news happened around. We were going to record like yesterday afternoon. The news happened at 11:30. And I was like, our number one priority needs to be drinking right now. Mm-hmm. Like I had a bottle of champagne that my brother sent me earlier this summer that I had been holding on to for a quote unquote special occasion. So I popped the Moet. I had some red wine. I feel like I don't remember what else I had. You immediately started doing shots.
Yeah, I was with my roommate. We took shots and then we went to this bar around the corner that has really nice sidewalk seating and they sell mimosa kits in the time of COVID. So
oh my God.
They give
just
you
throw away the orange.
They give you the whole bottle and like a little plastic cup of orange juice and you just make it yourself. So we I think we went through a few of those.
Oh my God, I love
that. Yeah, it was a good day.
It was a good day, and I feel like we haven't had many of those in recent memory. And so for not only us to have a good day, but to feel like every single person around us in our beloved, glorious bubble of New York City mm-hmm. was just feeling the celebratory win of it all. Like, we are, like we're getting our city back. It just, I can't describe it. I mean, I posted videos. I know you did, too. It's just... It was wild. Like, we'll never have a day like that again. I mean, I would love for, you know, the next stage to be at some point after January when there's some sort of good news about all things COVID. But at the end of the day, I mean, like, we couldn't have recorded yesterday. First off, I would have been trashed, number one. Number two, I felt like in the moment, like we need to put this aside. And the number one priority is to live in this experience after 4 monstrous years. Like mm-hmm. we deserve to have nothing else to think about aside from celebrating with strangers.
And you know
safely
what?
With masks.
You know what? As much as I love our dear ladies of Potomac, yesterday I was not thinking about them. Today, however, you know, strapped in, ready to go.
And listen, much like in 2016, when you look at the numbers, black women have saved our country. When
Absolutely.
You look at the numbers that have come in, it's so interesting. I was looking at a friend of all Bravoholics, Donald Adler's social, and he posted a long list of celebrities that he had tracked who he didn't say in any way address the election. And he's like, I'm not saying they're secret Trumpers, but I'm not saying that.
Right.
And I thought a lot about the work that has been done by Portia Candy, the cast of Atlanta and the cast of Potomac, mm-hmm. and the percentages that are like unbelievable of black women who voted for Biden, and the fact that they truly did, like, Georgia saved our country. I mean, I can, yeah. and I know that I think we're on the same page on this, regarding, I can't talk, oh my God, champagne. But when you think about the work that Portia has done, mm-hmm. for example, the women of Potomac, of course, as well, but the work that Portia has done with Black Lives Matter, with everything else, I mean, there is such a connection to the work that she did with raising awareness for Black Lives Matter, raising awareness for voter registration, amplifying people mm-hmm. who represented organizations devoted to discussing and breaking down voter suppression. And you look at those numbers in Georgia, like Portia, I genuinely, no joke, had an unbelievable role
yeah.
in getting people to the polls. Like, genuinely, no joke, she should be fucking commended.
Well, the thing with Georgia is that they have gotten so many people registered to vote and mm-hmm. feeling like they have the right to vote and like they are both excited and feel like they need to use that right in these elections just in the last couple years. And I mean, obviously, people like Stacey Abrams and all of the work that she's doing is a massive part of that. And they are making voting more accessible. But to have somebody like Portia, who is in such a public position, you know, mm-hmm. these women in the Atlanta cast have millions of followers on Instagram. They are, I think, very widely known and I think respected by a lot of people, particularly in the Black community. And, mm-hmm. you know, to have somebody like her, or like even somebody like Tanya, who is not, she can't mm-hmm. vote in the U.S. because she's not a citizen.
She's Canadian.
But she has been so outspoken on social media about how important it is to vote. And, you know, Candy has done so as well. You know, all of these people are, you know, really using their voice. And I was thinking about this yesterday, that with how close the numbers are looking in Georgia, mm-hmm. the amount of people that Portia inspired to get out and vote in this election mm-hmm. in Georgia, it's not zero. And so any number,
she had a role.
Any yeah, number she had higher a huge than role. Zero is vital mm-hmm. at this point, because mm-hmm. it is so close and there clearly is that possibility there. And, you know, it's just, you can't say enough good things. And I hope, I mean, obviously, it's on all of us to kind of do this work, but I hope that they continue that energy going into the Georgia Senate runoffs that we're going to have in January.
She's already done it. She's already talking about yeah. it. She's already talking about January and the runoffs. And I have to say that, you know, thinking about what Donald was posting on IG, like the devastating, I mean, devastating with a wink and a nod, silence of the Dallas Housewives, fucking DeAndra, who's such a piece of shit, which we've all known forever, but miss, I care about politics because I worked in a White House. Did I tell you about that time I worked in the White House? I care so much. Not posting a fucking thing, because of course she didn't, because you look at the people who didn't say anything, and if you want to know who a secret Trumper is, regardless of them being like, I hosted an event for him, or I gave him $25,000, but I love everybody. Like, no, go fuck yourself. Like, the people who pretend to be cool, pretend to be all TLC, I'm looking at you, Stephanie Holman, love yeah. you, think you're a great person, but maybe not so much about, you know, protecting the rights of those people who you say I love you back to in Instagram comments. Like, if you voted yeah. for him, and you don't even acknowledge the fact that Biden was projected the elected winner, regardless of who you voted for, you are playing into the idea that this is still a fraud. And I don't appreciate that. Like, well, thank you. I do not appreciate that.
And not only based on, you know, Joe Biden and whatever. Plenty of people don't love Joe Biden. That is a valid viewpoint, whatever.
Five people.
Just kidding. But I mean, the
he was like my number four in the primary, but I fucking love it.
The fact yeah. that we just elected our first female mm-hmm. vice president mm-hmm. is
a woman of color, first I woman mean, of yep.
To, I mean, we that's somewhere that we haven't gone before as a country, and I think there are. I have seen people on social media who I think generally don't really get political on social media that have still LOL. Kind of that have still kind of acknowledged how huge of a moment this is, just for the history of our country to finally mm-hmm. elect a woman on a presidential ticket. And mm-hmm. so that's the kind of thing where it's like, you don't have to post about how much you love Joe Biden, but like, to not be able to acknowledge and really, you know, feel the impact of the fact that we are going to have a woman in the White House, it's, you know, it's a big deal. And that, I think that's something that everybody should be able to kind of at least appreciate the significance of, even if they don't agree with the policies or whatever. I don't know.
I just think this is not a normal election in a time that is deeply abnormal. And understanding that truly by the very idea of not even acknowledging this, you are potentially playing into a narrative that this isn't yeah. real or is potentially fraudulent is so dangerous. And so I like to shift, you know, I've heard from some AGs who are like, oh, do you think that like Portia could post about this thing or that thing in the run up? And I just think like, are we putting that pressure on the White Housewives, or are we just right. expecting that these perfect Black women will continue to do what they have been doing times a thousand, because they have done more for this election and for social good than any other franchises and any other people. And it is slightly triggering for me when I hear from people who are like, oh, and you know, maybe they could do blah blah blah, and I know that people mean well, but I right. also think like, are you sliding into the DMs of Bethany Frankel, who couldn't have posted less, like who did right, something right, right. where it was like her in a sweatsuit, where it was more about what she was wearing than anything else, and
it's like,
God
of
bless
course,
she's at least
yeah.
donated. Like, there are other White Housewives that I could think of, but like anybody from New Jersey, like, can we not say that Black women and Black housewives need to do more, because they have done more than enough.
Right.
And enough, like, is even a tricky phrase.
Of course, Portia and these other Atlanta housewives, of course they should post about the Georgia runoffs. And they are and they will. But so should Kim Zolciak. So should, you know, anybody else. The thing that we're seeing with so much attention that's going to be on Georgia is that everybody should be posting about it, regardless of whether you live in Georgia.
Yeah. Right, exactly.
Because the thing is, I mean, if you have a million followers on Instagram, somebody lives in Georgia. That's the fact of the matter. But
understanding the political process and the stakes. Like, it is never a bad idea to talk about. To talk about politics and the importance of activating your vote, like, and the idea that you have to do it central to whatever state we're talking about, I just don't agree with. And I also think just the silence that we're hearing is maddening. And some of these people who can get away with a character or personality trait of, like, I love everybody, and then staying silent about what it means to actually not vote with love in your heart when you're talking about directly harming marginalized communities. It just shows your privilege. And it's just such a big fucking surprise that all of these people are white housewives. Anyway, well, it's a day of celebration.
We know that Victoria Gunvalson doesn't have a good track record of being nice to the new girl. So, you know, she's not going to congratulate Kamala. She's out here talking about Sleepy Joe on Instagram stories. She's not going to say anything.
With not a lot of pushback, which she should have in her head. I mean, my God, interesting. Interesting, Victoria. It's so interesting to me. I just have to say this one more thing. For a woman to get on an Instagram live with a gay man, understanding what's at risk, and to have such inherent selfishness in your head that you think that it's okay to make those kinds of comments because you are so deaf, dumb, and blind to the pain that the LGBT community has been going through and feeling about truly being directly harmed by the Trump administration, and then thinking you can say fucking Sleepy Joe and think that that's a joke when the person you're on the live with is a gay man. I just think that is so wildly offensive to me as a heterosexual woman. I just have to say, like, it's like this episode of Annie's Girls is my list of grievances, USA, USA. Like,
my list of grievances, and most of them are Vicky Gunvalson.
I mean, how could they not? P.S. Are she and Steve, what's the deal? So they unfollowed each other, then now they're like, we're totally fine. We just needed a tea out. Like, what's
made a comment. I can't remember, like, what outlet or whatever, but she said it wasn't true that they hadn't broken up. So,
but then why did they unfollow each other? Is that something that people do when they fight? It's been a second since I had a romantic
it could be one of those situations where,
oh, maybe they didn't unfollow.
Sometimes people just don't follow it. Like that. Mm-hmm. I feel like that happens with Lala and Randall every 4 months, that somebody's like, oh my God, Lala and Randall unfollowed each other. And every time they have to be like, we don't follow each other on Instagram. That's a thing.
Well, no, Lala unfollowed him because she was pissed at him. I think she said that.
No, she deleted the pics of them together. That's the thing. They've spoken publicly about the fact that they don't follow each other on Instagram. They've said it's not healthy for their relationship.
My bad.
But it's like every few months, some, you know, Bravo fan who thinks they have an idea about something, like, searches it and they're like, oh my God, they don't follow each other. What's happening, guys? And then they DM me and are like, post about this. And I'm like, no.
Yeah, I mean, and speaking of unfollowing, just before we get into all things Potomac, which we have to discuss.
Yes.
I truly do not care about this. People started DMing me immediately and I was like, oh, shucks, Erica and Tom. Do not care. If she timed it to Election Day to get actual extra press attention, you don't do that in the Bravo. Like, it's like announcing. It's like, this is you don't do these crazy things on this kind of day when all the focus is on one top. I think it was strategic is all I'm trying to say. I think the timing of it was strategic.
Oh,
and
for sure.
While she filed, it doesn't mean that she's the one that ended things. Let's just say that too.
Well, and I don't think anybody, you know, just from the statement and from, you know, just kind of the general vibe of what seems like it could be going on. I don't think this is a divorce that anyone is devastated about. I think it's, you know, a decision that was reached. I don't know the particulars of it, but I think they're both going to be fine. I don't know. I was surprised just in the sense that I always thought of them as just kind of like this partnership that was just going to
they had an agreement.
Kind of ride or die, like stick together.
Yeah.
So I was surprised just because we've heard for a while, you know, rumors or people see Tom with another woman, or there's rumors that Erica's, you know, hooking up with
stripping a dancer
with other people. Yeah. Like, it's not the kind of thing where there's never been chatter about their marriage, but it always seemed like the kind of thing where it was like they had whatever arrangement.
Right. It worked for them.
Like, I feel like whenever I would see some Reddit post about Tom was seen with another woman, it's like, I don't think that he's cheating on Erica. I think they have whatever their situation is. And I think if it was something secret, I don't think he would be dumb enough to be out at lunch in Beverly Hills with another woman, you know? So, I mean, whatever. It's like, I didn't expect it to happen, but at the same time, I'm not like, how could this happen?
I can't believe she's back full time. I actually cannot believe it. I do not. Meanwhile, Sutton's like renting Kyle's old house while her new one gets whatever. Like, Sutton could not be trying enough. And I mean that in the best possible way. Like, she just is giving us so much, and Sutton deserves to have a diamond. And the fact that fucking Erica Janes is like desperately needing to be polished, it's just not ideal. It's not an ideal situation for next season of BH, I'll say that.
I am curious. I mean, if they filed for divorce within the last week or two, they're clearly filming Beverly Hills right now. There's no way that it's not going to be addressed on the show. And I'm really curious.
I mean, she might have done it because of, they were filming.
I'm really curious.
Not to say that she's divorced because of that, but they might have timed it.
I'm going
to
be really curious to see kind of how that's handled. And if actually it is an opportunity for Erica to give us more in terms of, you know, an emotional connection, you know, being vulnerable. Because I feel like it's like every season, I feel like she's given us a little tidbit of, Erica's being more open this year. And it's this year we had it early in the season when she was, you know, crying with Tom and whatever. But like, it didn't really turn into anything. It was like, okay, Erica had like one vulnerable moment where she was crying on camera, but it didn't feel like season long she was actually giving us more. And
I'm just exhausted when I think about her, to be honest. I just feel like she is showing us she doesn't want to be there anymore. Why are we forcing her to stay? She just assumes that she deserves to be there. And that is not enough. She's not emotionally vulnerable. She's not professionally vulnerable. Like, showing us that she's doing like, you know, a tap rehearsal is not going to give me a season's worth of content. It's just showing me she knows how to count steps.
Well, that's the thing. I think, you know, I like some things about Erica, but simply being fabulous is not enough to be a 5-season housewife. You have to bring, there have to be multiple layers to it. And I think that's something that we see with most of these other women that are on the show for a long time, is that they have, you know, a season where they're really happy, a season where they're going through something difficult, you know, they're being messy, they're getting involved in the drama. And Erica, like, she's just very one note to me. And I don't particularly like the way that she usually acts when she's involved in kind of the group drama. I think the way she dealt with Denise and the way she dealt with Camille and stuff, like, it's just like, I'm not into it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how I feel about Beverly Hills. I'm so excited about Kathy. I think that was such a good call. And I think the friend of role is perfect for her. You know, but I just don't know what else is going to happen. Is Camille back next season?
No. No, for sure not.
Definitely not? Because didn't she say that before?
Definitely not in any capacity more than she was this season. But I don't think, I mean, she and Kyle are like enemies at this point.
Really?
They've been, yeah, I mean, they've fought with each other on Twitter recently. Like, they are not, I don't
recently thi- about what? Still about stuff from last season? This is the no, joy of I'm, me discontinuing my Twitter.
I wish I could remember the exact context.
It's okay.
But
I'm sure it was bullshit regardless.
It was something about... I think like Camille said something about the show and Kyle was like, oh, please, like you would still be on the show if blah, 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 blah. Like basically bickering about something related to Camille being on the show. And mm-hmm. it's the kind of thing where I don't think there's any real connection that would bring her back. It felt random when she came back this season and it never really.
Yeah.
It felt like they. Out. It felt like there was that one episode before mm-hmm. Kyle's party where they kind of made a whole thing of that Camille is coming back into the group. And then mm-hmm. she essentially disappeared for almost the whole rest of the season. And so it was like, why did we spend half an episode watching her make amends with everyone just for her to like leave again?
I mean, she had that great moment when she was at the door and it was like very, they were greeting each other at the door and it was very like Dallas Dynasty, like old school nighttime soap money glam thing with like a wink and a nod. And then there was no payoff, which was actually really surprising. It just didn't go anywhere.
I would be really curious. I don't know if this is, if I'm thinking, reading too much into this, but I feel like they had some kind of roadmap that they wanted Camille to come back and follow.
Brandy.
And then it just kind of didn't go anywhere.
Oh, okay.
Because I don't know why they would have, honestly, I don't know why they even left all of that stuff with Camille in the show if it wasn't going to go anywhere. But I don't know why they would have gone and filmed at Camille's house if they didn't have a plan that she was going to be kind of more in the mix again.
Possible they didn't have anything else, which is another sign that Erica Jayne needs to, you know, retire her diamond and have it go to somebody who is interested in actually playing the game and like revealing themselves. I'm so excited that we have, you know, a new full-time housewife who's the first housewife on Beverly Hills of Asian descent, I believe.
Yes.
Which is amazing.
Really curious about her. Because I feel like her kind of what we know about her feels very like, I don't know. She seems very normal.
I don't know a lot about her. Yeah, she seems very normal, but I'm into it. So I'm into it's a little bit normal, but so I need somebody else to not be normal.
It'll be interesting to see kind of what her energy is like, because right now we just know she has cute kids and she's married to a Disney guy and, you know, what we know kind of like the bullet points of her life/career, but it'll be interesting to see kind of what her personality is like, because we don't really know anything about her in that sense.
Completely agree. Okay, listen, we need to talk about Potomac.
We do.
In this on a great day for this country, for this nation, we need to talk about the actual jewel. They don't need a diamond. They have flutes of champagne. Oh my fucking God. Listen, so I finally watched it again just now, but right before we started recording. It's got me like, I feel very like, ooh, like things are happening. We have so many different plots to discuss. Mm-hmm. This whole like Monique Candace counter lawsuit. I have feelings about, you know, what are you, how has your potential opinion changed as these episodes have gone on specific to the Candace and Monique of it all?
Well, okay, so this whole time I've been very, I would say, unwilling to take a side, because I prefer to be team no one in this particular debate, because I definitely am on Candace's side in the sense of the actual physical altercation. I totally don't think that was called for. I think Monique was wrong. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I think both of them have dealt with it pretty poorly in the aftermath, and I also think Candace is a bad person, so I'm not gonna be out here like team Candace, woo. I think it's been really interesting to see in the last few episodes kind of how things have developed, and we saw the way Candace has been talking about pressing these charges and talking about what she wants the outcome to be, I think is really gross, kind of, when she's talking about
prison and
the
stuff.
Maximum sentence. And like when they asked her at what event was that? Oh, at the Sip and See, when all the women were kind of talking about it and they were asking her, they were like, you don't want her to go to prison, do you? And she was like,
when even Giselle is saying
and
that,
she was like, and she kind of gave a like, well, like, I don't know, like, the judge will decide, like, very kind of, it's just icky. And it's like, I don't know how anyone, I totally understand why she is rattled in that situation and why she's upset and angry and feels very hurt, both, I mean, I guess more emotionally, I don't think, but I think she's acting like she was hurt physically. And it's like, you were certainly violated physically by Monique, but I think it's a little over the top to act as if this is like some, you know, lasting medical trauma. It's like, you are fine.
Also, if you're taking, you know, if you're pressing charges, you're seeking the max or whatever, why are you surprised that person isn't like laying down and taking it? You know, like, why are you surprised that Monique's not going to be like, oh, you know, it really feels like Candace is so emotionally immature that she really thinks and sees, she's had such a veil over her eyes that it feels like she thinks, I file these charges, and then the judge is like, oh my God, Monique, you're a bad person, and I'm gonna tell you that you're a terrible person, and I'm gonna sentence you to whatever, and Candace is an angel on earth. Like, babe, if you are actually taking the stance that you think you want the actual maximum, you don't think that someone is gonna file a countersuit counter charges plus a countersuit, whatever else,
right,
to fight back? Like, you don't think that's gonna happen, and you're shook by that? Or how, why? I understand you being upset about it, but feeling like, how is this even real? That is the court system in this country. She has every right to file whatever she wants back just to hopefully try to dilute what it is that you're saying. Of course she is, regardless of the reality of what happened.
Yeah.
We're not even talking about what happened anymore. We're talking about her character.
Right. And I think, I mean, Candace is obviously very dramatic. We all know that. Mm-hmm. But like, at the end of the episode, when we see her after she finds out that Monique is like trying to also press charges, Candace has a way with words that I think few other people really have. And when she says, fuck that rusty ass bitch, and then is talking to Chris, and she goes, you have no scruples. I don't know what it is about the way Candace strings together these insults, but it is like just like warmth in my soul. And at the same time, I think she's like such a shitty person, but I just like, I love the way she reads.
I think she is a monster. I think she's an awful person. I think she is in real life one of the most toxic and dangerous Bravo celebrities, certainly one of the most toxic and dangerous housewives, and has not been held accountable. It's so interesting to me that Candace's misaccountability about everybody else's behavior only when it's against her versus her own, which, as we've seen by people talking online about some of her trolling and genuinely vile abusive behavior and comments against members of the Bravo community, there should be zero tolerance. And she seems to live in a place of zero tolerance. She just doesn't live inside it. But her home seems to think that anybody else that comes in the norm should have zero tolerance handed to them.
Right.
And yet, that scene of her with Chucky or Chuck or whatever, when they did like a 2-second clip of that song, I fucking love that song.
I feel so bad because I hate her, but that is a bop.
I'm sorry.
I think just from a technical standpoint, it is probably one of, if not the best, Housewife songs.
Yes.
I am a little bit like, why are you trying to make us think that she's like going to be a recording artist? Like, this isn't actually like,
I mean, Melissa Gorga got how many seasons out of it? Although that should not be the standard. It should not be the Melissa Gorga recording studio.
It's hilarious when the Gorgas put their house up for sale and you look at the listing, there's like a photo of the recording studio in the basement.
It's probably a screenshot of the episode.
It's still down there. I don't know how long it's been since it was used for anything legitimate.
I don't know that it was ever used. I mean, legitimate is the right. I think Joe Gorga was like, let's record an album called Poison or something. And it was terrible. And then nobody went down there ever again. Talk about a dungeon. But I just can't. You guys are so loopy. It's been a week.
On display.
each and every. Finally, P.S. Melissa Gorga's songs are available on IG stories. How many years has our country lived in a place of such damage and such pain? And you know what? I'm not going to say that listening to 15 seconds of On Display and an Instagram story of my shoes would have been the change maker for our country, but I'm not saying that. Okay?
I agree. I have a Spotify playlist called Bravo Bops that is, you know, really good for the soul if you're looking for
Is it public?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll link it to it in the show notes for this episode. Guys, do yourselves a favor and listen to Bravo
Bops. I'm like a little ashamed how
I'm listen to it.
I'm a little ashamed like how much time I've spent like unironically listening to it, but it's fine.
No, I love that. I also like I'm really into Chucky or Chucky Thompson.
Yeah, Chucky.
I'm really into him and his vibe. I could watch that scene over and over again. I don't know what it is. And I like loathe Candace. I think she's a bad egg. She is a bad apple. Her, you know, glasses sham spoiled at some point. I don't know, in her tweens. But I just really think that song is great. I'm going to listen to the fuck out of it. I wonder when it's going to come out. Maybe the episode where charges are dismissed. Like, there's usually some sort of...
Is it not already out? I haven't really looked.
Well, like, with Lou, she didn't release Viva La Diva until, like, the X episode where it was launched. So I'm guessing that Candace is doing the same if she's thinking strategically, which means nothing. But it's possible. I don't know. I just can't wait to listen to it. I'm going to listen to the fuck out of it.
I think it's out. Oh, wait. There's one from 2019. There's two different versions. Neither of them say Ricky.
Yeah, the bad version. So she had her version that nobody cares about. And then Chucky came in and was like, let's make this into a great song. And that's what happened. I mean, it's like
I think it's for the party. It is on. There's a remix on Spotify.
Okay, we're going to listen to
that. That might be it.
Then.
I don't know. Okay.
Nobody tell her you like the song, by the way. Do not comment. Do not feed that dangerous ego of hers. Just listen to it privately, even though I just told thousands of people how great I thought the song was.
Can we talk about Giselle thinking Robin's hat company is called Embezzled?
Well, I mean, that goes to show you that maybe her relationship with Jamal is in fact real. If her first thought is embezzling, it does mean that she's probably thinking of her ex-husband more than we think off camera. I mean, a moment in time. Also, Giselle, who I don't know if she's going to get the real pushback that I think people are looking for her role in all of this, but Giselle talking about Robin's IRS issues and being like, she genuinely was being serious. Like, it's a couple hundred dollars. Like, it's $1,200. It's like not a big deal. And then the producer's like, it's $80,000. And her immediate reaction is like, oh, fuck.
That was crazy. That was a wild moment because clearly it was in like blogs or tabloids or like, it was not a secret thing. It's like, wait, Giselle, you think she's struggling? Oh, she has a tax lien over $1,200. Like,
I do actually think that is in fact possible. So I sort of do get Giselle's perspective into all of that. I mean,
last week's episode when Robin wore that wig and Candace in her confessional was like, just pay the taxes.
Here's the thing.
I love Robin.
I mean, I love Robin. I love Potomac. I also think like we can talk about the show on a quasi superficial level of like of talking about and I don't mean that as a critique, but just of like me thinking more about like Giselle's face, you know, versus the actual psychology and the minutiae of it all. And in both places, I am like completely satiated. I just think Potomac can give us as much or as little as we need as viewers in that moment. You know, like you can do a deep dive or you can just say, I just need to feel good for 44 minutes plus commercials. And either way, you're going to feel great.
Well, and we haven't even talked about one of the biggest kind of, I think, real discussions this week, which is Karen and Wendy having this argument about education and being called ignorant, and you know, Karen kind of shading Wendy and saying she's not a real doctor and like all of this stuff. I think all of those dynamics are so kind of complex and interesting, and I understand why the other women are kind of like, Wendy, stop talking about your degrees, but at the same time, mm-hmm. it is a huge deal for somebody like her, the daughter of immigrants, to have such a high level of education. And, you know, there are different, you know, like not everyone's success is measured in the same way. And having 4 degrees isn't necessarily automatically better than whatever, there's a lot of interesting dynamics. And I like that they're kind of getting into this, because I don't know another Housewives show where we've really seen, you know, that sort of conversation happening.
Yeah, I mean, I it's interesting when you watch that play out, knowing that, as Karen herself says, like, Ray has a doctorate. So in something, didn't she say he had like a doctorate in business? I don't know. I have an undergrad degree. I went to school for theater.
I have a BA
with a minor in musical theater, because the musical theater program is amazing, but didn't have a major. PhD in business. Is that a thing? Anybody who's listening to this, can you slide into my DMs?
I know you can get a PhD in like economics. I don't know about business.
He could have. Oh, there is a business PhD program at Tufts Fletcher School.
Okay.
There's a grad. I mean, graduate. Their executive PhD isn't the same name. There. It looks like there's a PhD program at Fordham in business. I might have made up business. Maybe it was finance or something. I don't know. I thought that Karen was saying that Ray had a doctorate, and watching Karen and Wendy attempt to understand each other, and Wendy thinking that once again she has this moment to have a moment, except that Karen is genuinely so funny that Wendy couldn't even remain upset when they got into the like Harry Potter Slytherin of it all, they're just like sliding by. I mean, that was phenomenal. I mean, it feels like Wendy sometimes tries to like remain hot a little bit,
yes,
but she doesn't need to.
Karen says you slithered down the steps, and Wendy full like, this is her full reality, she goes, I sauntered. Like, these women, I can't say enough how much I appreciate them and how wonderful I think they are. And I think we're with Wendy, you know, we've seen her on more than, you know, we've had like 12 episodes, whatever, of seeing her now. I think she kind of has an interesting dynamic of, she clearly is very smart. She's very educated. We all know that. Mm-hmm. But I think sometimes we see in these, you know, in these situations where she's having a disagreement with someone, I think she feels like she has the upper hand because she is, you know, professor and this educated woman with all these degrees and blah, 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 blah. And I think she is kind of hopefully going to learn at some point that there's nothing wrong with that, and that those are legitimate qualifications or whatever. But this is Real Housewives, and, you know, having a PhD isn't the end all be all of what kind of gives you power and status as a Real Housewife. And I think she maybe is leaning on those things a little too much. And I hope that, I have a feeling she'll be back next season, and I feel like it'll be interesting to see if she kind of, you know, figures out a correction of that, where it's like, we all know those things. Nobody's taking that away from you. But in this argument, that's not what's going to win you points.
Well, the valuation on Housewives is different than it is in real life. And it's different, certainly, than it is in her life in academia, where 4 degrees probably doesn't even need to be said because everybody knows going in your CV. And on Housewives, it's like, okay, cool, but what are you bringing to this scene, which can't be encapsulated in where you went to school? You know, like,
right.
She's still an undergrad at Housewives University, which is something that I think she probably struggles with a little bit, because she does say, look, I bring so much value from my success and the fact that I am so highly educated, which shouldn't be taken away from her. It's great. But also, you don't have a master's degree in the edit. And so what editors are going to do is make sure that every single scene and every moment where you're talking about your 4 degrees are a part of these episodes, which can change sometimes the viewer opinion, which goes from, this is a highly educated woman who is showing us different aspects of her character, to that this is someone who is only using her degrees as her like primary mode of defense, which is fine once or twice, but it can get a little exhausting, you know?
And the thing is,
you don't want that to become the joke.
With these women that we've been watching for 3, 4, 5 seasons, they already have earned this status as kind of top tier housewives. Like somebody like Karen Huger, of course, in the real world, you know, she's saying, I don't have that education, but I've been blessed with the entrepreneurial spirit or whatever. That is great. But for us as the viewer, it's like we're watching, like Karen Huger's resume as a housewife is already impressive. Like we already have, she gave us the press conference. She gave us all this perfume shit. She's given us, you know, she's had these financial issues. So it's like, Wendy obviously has all of these qualifications in real life, which are very impressive. Nobody's taking that away from her. But when it comes to your housewives kind of list of achievements, she's still working on it. And of course, it's her first season. Anyone in that position would be. And I think she maybe feels like she has an upper hand sometimes because she has all of this education and whatever. And it's like, no, you're dealing with people who like already got their housewives PhD and you're fresh. You're in freshman year. Like,
yeah. Yeah. And I think that can probably be a struggle for someone obviously whose family is so highly invested in her success because it reflects so strongly and magnifies their own. Like I had no idea that in the Nigerian community, I love the idea that the wife, mother of the family, the matriarch is really in that such a position of power. I think that's fantastic. And it's so interesting to me too to understand the pressure that she was under because how her mom is seen as a member of her community is directly related to what Dr. Wendy does for work, where she went to school, how many degrees she has. I mean, we talk about how much she's talking about having the 4 degrees, but it's entirely possible that that is in many ways a valuation for her mom and in their community and culture. That is a great thing. So of course she's going to talk about it because she's coming from potentially a situation, and I'm saying this as an outsider to this, so I'm sorry if I'm saying this incorrectly or inaccurately, but that could very well be, of course they're going to talk about it constantly because it is such a huge sign of essentially like wealth when you think about it. You know, like the idea that so much of her mom's reputation is based on her own and her own work. I mean, the amount of stress and pressure that puts on someone can be devastating. And the fact that she's trying to break that cycle, and even how she's talking about her beyond adorable kids, those two boys are the fucking cutest. Absolutely. I die for them. But when she's talking about how she wants to make sure that they are in a position where they feel free to do what they want and that they know that their mom is going to support and love them, you know, it shows that she's understanding and she has so much love for her culture and her community. And what we're able to learn from about the Nigerian community watching these episodes is unbelievable. But also she's saying, okay, now I am my own person trying to figure out my relationship with my mother without harming her or harming her role and her reputation in our community. But I also am a grown ass adult with 3 kids, 4 degrees, a hot husband, and I want to start doing what it is that I want to do. And
three
maybe part
kids.
Of that is joining housewives.
I totally agree. And I think I hope Wendy and Karen can maybe sit down and have a real conversation about this, because I think it's been really interesting what Wendy has kind of told us, the viewers, about, you know, being in a Nigerian family and what this means to her parents and her mom. And I think it's just a cultural difference, because we saw it was amazing a couple episodes ago, finally getting to see where Karen comes from and more of her upbringing and her family life. And that for her coming from Surrey, she's the one who made it from there. You know, she is the daughter who made it out and is famous and has, you know, success and whatever. And so it's like, in a lot of ways, I think they're similar to each other, just the metrics for their success are very different. And so it's like, Karen doesn't have the degrees, but she still is, you know, the one who kind of made it from her hometown. And I think, you know, if they could kind of have a chill conversation and like a heart to heart about that, I think they would realize that one thing isn't better than the other just because it's not what's valued in your community, maybe.
Yeah, and it's so hard, the ways in which women sometimes use these like gender norms as weapons against each other, when it's like we're just harming each other by continuing this narrative that because you're working full time as a stay at home mom, because you are, you know, maintaining a household is obviously mm-hmm. a job, that is somehow lessened when it comes to how smart you are, how intelligent you are, how financially successful, independent you are. It's just unfair to compare the two, which is not in any way to take away from the enormous work that was put into having four fucking degrees, including a doctorate, obviously. But that doesn't have to be every single person's goal, you know, like,
right.
I'm not interested in getting a PhD and send from SAS.
Yeah, no.
With honors. You know, it's like it's okay. It's okay to have different goals in life and to have success that's not necessarily measured in a level of education or the number in your bank account.
And I mean, look at Robin. She's making it happen with those hats. Some of the hats are cute.
About those hats. No, some of the hats, not. They're awful. They're terrible, Dylan.
I'm trying to be nice. I liked the floral one that Karen was wearing.
Here's what I want for Robin. I want Robin, take back everything that I said about financial success or whatever. I want her to feel financially successful. I want her to like feel that, feel the power, and like feel all of it. And I want her to just get everything that she wants in life.
Yes.
And I want that for her. I will never. Well, I also don't have a head that was made for hats. My head is too big for hats. It is not possible. It just doesn't work. I would need to get a custom made embezzled hat by Robin Dixon. It wouldn't work out for me, but I want it to be successful. I want it to. It's going to be better than the house stuff.
I want the Dixons. I want the Dixons to be debt free and loaded.
Yes. And I want Robin to feel like she did it. And she did. She's bringing in so much money as a housewife. I think that's great. And listen, I'm so happy for that hat company and for Katie Ross to be back for season 5. I think I love that cameo.
I loved the hooing of Katie Ross. Like,
oh my God. So low key. Amazing. Cutting. Who is that? And it's like, you don't know that you're going to show up because you signed a release for Housewives of Potomac and you didn't look at who was peed on a couch at the season 1 reunion. Okay, fine. Some of us just have different values in life, apparently. Some of us just
Wendy
care
did not,
too much about
Wendy did not do her research,
other things,
apparently.
But I mean, my God. I wonder if Katie Ross is watching Potomac. Do we think she is?
I don't know if she has cable. I don't
Maybe
even
in
mean
that Vortex in her backyard.
She's like, we only get like C-SPAN. We get like one channel. They have to like fix the antenna.
Oh my God. Those flashbacks of like when they were juxtaposing the model with Katie, and they do, that actually did look like her doppelganger. Mm-hmm. That was amazing. But it's like those wigs and stuff. Oi, Katie, we're never going to unsee them. My God.
No, I just wishing Katie all the best. I honestly
wishing
have
her all
so
the best,
much.
All the very best.
I see updates about her from time to time. And to be honest, mm-hmm. it's like, I don't really need to know. Katie's not somebody mm-hmm. that I'm not invested in whatever tea or drama or anything that's going on. I don't keep up mm-hmm. with it. I just hope she's well.
Mm-hmm. I completely agree. So going into this trip, it looks like Ashley and Candace are going to have words. Is it accurate to say that's going to be somehow related to Candace thinking that Ashley did like some sort of character statement or for Monique, or what do you think the deal
is? Oh yeah,
there?
I guess, to be honest, Ashley's kind of frustrating me with this whole situation because I think all the postpartum depression and stuff that she's been open about is really amazing. Mm-hmm. But then to juxtapose that with how she's been handling this Candace and Monique situation just makes me kind of mad, because I think she is absolutely kind of overstepping her bounds in terms of picking a side and acting as if she knows what happened when she, in fact, was not in the room at the time of the actual altercation. She was in the bathroom. and I really wish... The thing is, I obviously Ashley and Candace have their issues, and I get Ashley's perspective in that, but I wish that she would just keep her mouth shut about the situation with Monique, because it's making her look bad. I really think it is that it's like, we already know you don't like Candace. That's fine. You can have your time to have that argument in a different scene, but we don't need your perspective on the thing with Monique that you didn't even see, when it's obvious that you're just going to say that you're just going to take Monique's side.
Okay, just to say, what's the difference between what Giselle was doing and what Robin, not merely Robin, but really what like Giselle and Dr. Wendy have been doing about blindly supporting Candace, which we know is not just about Candace, but bringing down Monique, versus yeah. what Ashley is doing, aside from the fact that Ashley is the only one doing it. Like, they both need to yeah. have defenders, regardless of whether or not I agree with them, you know? And but, in both cases, it's not just because of the altercation itself.
I think the difference for me is that, well, first of all, in terms of the altercation itself, which I know is not the whole issue.
Right.
I think Ashley is totally kind of speaking out of turn in terms of kind of claiming to know things and talking about how things went down that she wasn't there for. And at this
right,
point,
she literally didn't see
at
it.
This point, she wouldn't have seen footage yet. I don't imagine that they would have shown her stuff. So that's part of it. But then also I think that to some degree, a part of a basis of what Giselle and Wendy are talking about is at least they're at least claiming that it's rooted in this altercation that happened. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I do, like I said, I think that both of them are in the wrong, but that in the physical situation, it definitely was more Monique's fault than Candace's. But at the same time, I don't agree with the way that Giselle and Wendy are handling this either. I think Giselle kind of, when they had that intervention scene at Karen's house, I thought Giselle kind of made a fool of herself with the taking the notes and bringing the security. Mm-hmm. And I thought Robin did such a better job of mm-hmm. taking a similar position, but actually articulating it well and not, you know, putting on a show. And, you know, it's like you can feel this way and you can say how you feel, but it felt like Giselle was just like doing the most, and it's like, mm-hmm. that's not helpful in this situation. But more and more, the person who I think is handling it the best is Karen. I feel like, you know,
oh my God. Karen is absolutely
at
the
first,
secret sauce.
I will 100%. Say at first, after that
yes.
intervention episode, mm-hmm. I was a little like, Karen, this is a weird look. Like, it doesn't mm-hmm. feel like you're holding Monique accountable. But now mm-hmm. that it's been a few weeks and we've seen her kind of interact with both of them and have more kind of nuanced conversations about it, I really think Karen is sort of the only one in the cast that is really kind of unpacking the mm-hmm. guilt on both sides and trying mm-hmm. her best. It's a complicated thing, but really trying to hold both sides to account and to be fair in how she's kind of dealing with both of these people who she has relationships with both of them. I think it's not a coincidence that she's the one in the middle and she's the one that actually cares for both Candace and Monique, whereas mm-hmm. I think the other women are sort of being a little disingenuous with how they're viewing it because they're letting their personal biases really take hold.
Well, I completely agree, and I also think it absolutely shows the level of emotional maturity that Karen has to say, like, obviously I don't agree with what happened, but we are not going to demonize this woman mm-hmm. as a mother, as a person, as a coworker. This is not the entirety of her character, versus Candace, who's trying to repeatedly say this is the entirety right. of her character. Like, this is it. At the end of the day, Candace seems to have, I don't even know what to call it, sort of like a zero tolerance for yeah. acts of violence without in any way acknowledging her own responsibility for acts of violence that may not be physical, but are certainly emotional, and can in many ways add enormous harm to people. You know, I just yeah. think it's Karen at least gets it in a way that, and is able to communicate it effectively in a way that I didn't necessarily appreciate in the moment, but I certainly have in the week since.
Well, and at the, I think it was at like Wendy's voting event when Candace and Karen went off to the side and were talking about this, and Candace basically was saying that she didn't feel supported. And for when Karen's response was basically, I haven't done anything for Monique that I wouldn't do for you. Like, I'm not, mm-hmm. I'm not taking anyone's side. And if Candace wants to say there's no gray area or there's no, you know, that it's black or white, you can either get on or get off. She can say that if she wants, but Karen knows and understands, I think, the reality, which is that this is a nuanced situation. There is blame on both sides, and both sides, both Candace and Monique, should be held accountable in some respect. Mm-hmm. And I think it really just reflects well on Karen. And I hope that as they're watching the season, Monique and Candace would be able to kind of understand that. But at the same time, I think both of them are pretty in their own bubble of anger and mm-hmm. denial and whatever else. So I'm not super hopeful that Candace is going to watch it and be like, you know, Karen, I understand. But I think for most of us watching that aren't kind of, you know, there are definitely some people who are like, stan Candace, she was wronged. I think for most people watching, they can really appreciate that Karen is doing her best and that she's the only one who really is, you know, willing to actually think about this and grapple with the fact that both of them made mistakes.
She's the only one who's even communicating that there's inherent nuance to this, you know, like she's literally the only one. I think Robin is certainly open-minded to it, but everybody else seems to be of the perspective that the entirety of who Monique is in this, you know, however many minutes, because unfortunately it wasn't just like the one moment, it was her chasing everything else.
Yeah.
But, you know, like it was a bad night that had brought with it a lot of built up anger and frustration. And if we want to talk about the entirety of someone's character, then what kind of character of a person exists when you're talking about how to spread rumors about her youngest child? You know, like character mm-hmm. goes a lot of different ways, and there's a lot of responsibility to go around. And I really am genuinely curious for how this reunion is going to go, because I don't know that Potomac is going to be given the opportunity, or maybe that we, the audience, are going to be given the opportunity to see these women really acknowledge the things that we're talking about in real time,
mm-hmm.
which isn't to take away from the season at all, which has been sublime. But I just, I would love to see a conversation where, you know, the rumors are brought up, where Giselle sort of has to acknowledge her own role in this, in sort of starting this process, or, you know, the events that followed because of this. Or that was in many ways inflamed by this. It would be interesting. I don't know that it's going to happen.
I'm really curious in terms of the reunion, if assuming that everyone is going to show up, which I think is going to be the case, I'm curious whether Monique will kind of have guidelines of like, if I'm coming to the reunion, we're not going to talk about my husband or like me cheating with the, mm-hmm. you know, like I could see it being that kind of situation where she's saying like, I'm not going to speak about this, but because mm-hmm. that's basically what she's done on the show. And we've only really gotten even a little bit of that information through stuff that other people are saying in their confessionals. But yeah, I mean, I think we're about to go on this trip, which Monique is not going to be on, and which mm-hmm. to be honest, I think is kind of the right call.
Yeah. In I terms totally agree of with it would have been a mess.
I don't think it was like an automatic thing in terms of Monique shouldn't get to go on this trip because of her behavior. But I just think in terms of the cast dynamic, there's no real way to have a cast trip at this point and not have it just be like Karen, Ashley, and Monique.
I mean, it's just any kind of group filming.
Right.
It's not going to take place until the end of the season for this reason related to what happened. So obviously you throw a passport in there and it's like, no, fuck no, obviously not. Like,
yeah.
God bless Ashley for even trying. But like, no, obviously that's not going to work out. There hasn't even been at this point, and even through really today, an admission of regret from Monique that would need to happen, plus many conversations
right.
before you even need to get near all of them together, because they would just inflame each other. It would be a fucking mess.
Yeah. So I think, I mean, it's always unfortunate when the whole cast can't go on the trip for any reason, mm-hmm. I think. But I'm glad that everyone minus Monique is going to be there. And I think there's still a lot of good potential for exciting stuff to happen with that remaining six people.
Speaking of good potential for exciting stuff to happen. So the night before election night, which I initially thought was wild timing, and now I have no choice but to stay on my calendar on Monday.
Oh my
you
God.
And I were present for the, what was it?
So they, much like they did yeah. for Potomac, they had sort of a
screening party.
Yeah, like a media Zoom event where we all got to watch the premiere ahead of time. And then mm-hmm. several of the housewives were on this Zoom call.
For Salt Lake City.
Yeah, so it was there was a moderator, and then a lot of us got to ask questions as well. So it was Jen Shah, Heather Gay, Lisa Barlow, and Meredith Marks. And it was really fun. It was a good mm-hmm. time.
Yeah, and I just have to say, we've both watched the reunion. We both watched the premiere more than once, and it's so top-notch, I can't even tell you.
It's really good.
It's really, really good, and I heard that from people who had seen it before I saw it, that it was really good, and then I saw it, and I was like, oh, fuck, like, this is genuinely really good. And whatever change they needed to do behind the scenes as far as, like they changed like the production company or like the edit or something. It just means they had a whole lot more extra footage, which certainly works in our favor. It just feels like they're firing in all cylinders. Whatever happened, I don't really know what happened, but thank God that it did, because
it feels,
this is fucking great.
It feels very fresh, I think. It mm-hmm. feels tight. It feels like, I mean, obviously it's the first episode of a new show with people that we don't know yet. So a lot of the episode is spent kind of introducing us to each of them, giving us mm-hmm. a little look into their lives, and kind of mm-hmm. we start to see how they're interconnected with each other. And I think already more than some other casts, and certainly more than a lot of the casts are now, it's a group that has a lot of really interesting connections with each other. We have mm-hmm. some people that have known each other for years, since college even, you know, some kind of more recent connections. Different people know mm-hmm. each other different ways. It feels like the kind of cast where they did a really good job of finding people that have a lot of variety between them, but still kind of mm-hmm. have these connections, so that they all kind of make sense together as a group. But that mm-hmm. it's a very, I think, diverse group in terms of religious backgrounds, personality mm-hmm. types. You know, there's just a lot going on, and it's all mm-hmm. exciting so far.
Yeah, it's great to see like a genuinely diverse cast. It's great to mm-hmm. see women with money. God bless. If like drinking game alert, like take a shot every time you hear someone say chalet. Like, I just fucking love all
chalet.
Of it. It's so good. I'm gonna watch it another six times before the premiere. I'm so excited to unpack it next week. I just think that you guys, it's like appointment television, honestly. You're going to love it, and it's exactly what we need right now. Like, what else could bring our country together? women of Salt Lake City.
I know. I'm so excited because we have Salt Lake starting this week, which I'm very excited for. And I think, you know, from what I've been seeing people saying, I think most of the Bravo community and viewers are really excited to see what it's like. And mm-hmm. I don't know how that will translate to actual ratings numbers, but I think in general, people are really excited for it. I hope it does well. We have mm-hmm. Atlanta coming back in less than a month now.
Yes, I did a Patreon live recording. If you go to the Andy's Girls Patreon, where I watched and reacted to the trailer live, and it was just a lot of inaudible screeching, to be honest. So I hope that I did closed captioning, which I 100% did not for this audio.
It's craziness. It's interesting. Like, obviously, because of COVID, Atlanta was delayed a little bit. Normally, they would have been premiering tonight, probably. They usually are early November. But mm-hmm. it still feels like they really got it together fast. I think they mm-hmm. just finished filming like last week. Mm-hmm. So It's going to be a whirlwind, but I'm very excited to see what they bring this season. I miss Atlanta. I think sometimes I like forget about it a little bit, not in like a shady way, but just like it's when it's not on TV, sometimes it's not top of mind, and I'm very excited to have it back every week.
Yeah, I think it's, I'm really excited for it. I'm so glad Kenya's there. I'm very confused about what's happening with Kenya and Mark. Maybe I haven't been following it in real time, but I thought that they were like sort of back together. So if I'm understanding what was happening in the trailer, it seems like that is no longer potentially the case, which would be great, I think, because she deserves so much more than what he was giving her, which was like less than zero. There's a lot there, and everything with like Candy's, you know, former partner or boyfriend, and, you know, potential support for Riley. There's a lot. There's a lot of like really serious stuff happening, which
I feel like at this point, now that
Atlanta does well,
now that Lenithia's gone, who I have loved, but was
bye wig.
I had gone cold on NeNe these last couple seasons. Mm-hmm. Now that she's gone, now that Eva the Diva has, you know, said her goodbye, I actually, I really am into everyone in this cast. I am, I think, more into Kenya than I ever have been. I don't know. I don't, Kenya has rubbed me the wrong way a lot, but I think now I've kind of softened on her, you know, TBD if that continues once the season starts. Obviously, I love into Portia. It. I think Candy's a badass, you know. Mm. I'm excited to see Drew, our new housewife, this season.
Yes, I know nothing about her.
I don't
know. So that'll be interesting.
I don't know much about her either. And I mean, I like Marlo. I like Tanya. Like, it's really, Atlanta has an all-star cast. There's no, obviously we have a couple new people this season that the jury is out on yet, but they don't have anyone in the cast that's like a like B-string housewife.
Yeah, I think I'm hopeful that it's going to be good. Obviously, I think that we just need to sort of isolate the COVID franchise seasons and understand that we're operating in a world in which a lot was even not known when they started shooting, and that it may or may not feel like a typical season, and that's okay. We're just also grateful to see them back, also grateful for, you know, new content that doesn't feel inherently problematic unlike other franchises. And so I'm just really excited to see what's going on in their lives, how they react to what's going on in the world and all of us, and obviously with Portia as a genuine, amazing, incredible activist. I'm excited for her to get her proper due there. So I think it's going to be great. I think it's going to be great to watch, you know, like we'll see how the season plays out, but I'm appreciative of it and for it.
Well, and with what you were saying, we now have, so we have Salt Lake starting this week, Atlanta, and then we also have now full seasons of New Jersey and Dallas in the can. Mm-hmm. They've finished filming both of them. So coming, I would assume, early 2021. It feels so good because there was so much uncertainty earlier this year. It feels really, it's a relief that all of these shows were able to make it happen. And whatever happens with second wave, I don't know. Mm-hmm. We're going to have, there's plenty of new content that is going to come down the pipeline.
I couldn't tell you how I couldn't be less interested in watching Dallas. I think it's going to be awful. I'm sorry. Take back everything
know.
That I just said about Atlanta.
I don't know. I think
it's going to be trash. I can't believe they brought back Carrie with a K.
I have hope. I don't know.
What is even going to happen? And it's all like fucking, I don't know.
You know, we went to this Bravo Zoom happy hour with Stephanie, and she said that it's going to be a good season. So,
well, if Stephanie says maybe it, you know, she doesn't talk about everything.
I have no reason to believe that Dallas is going to be a good season, but for some reason, I still have hope. I can't not have hope.
No, it's, we need hope in this country. And I also have to say, just about all things Stephanie Holman, that just because obviously Andy's Girls talks about life and politics is such an inherent part of life, that, you know, some of my frustration at the beginning of the episode is just understanding the innate privilege that can come with not feeling the need to talk about politics because you feel like your life isn't going to change regardless of who's in a position of power. And I don't think it's a bad thing to hold people accountable for their silence. Like, no. I don't think it's a bad thing to hold favorites accountable for their silence. And people have the expression that, like, politics isn't just for me, but if it's not for you, it might be for people whose lives can come in jeopardy and in great harm and in danger because of decisions that are made by people when they cast their ballot. And so understanding that Dallas is a franchise made uniformly of people who are quiet Trump supporters, who may publicly say that they don't agree with bullying or tactics or whatever, but, you know, their political contributions, which have been made public, show a very different picture. Mm-hmm. I think it is very okay for us to say to people, regardless of whether or not they're a fan favorite, that we sort of expect more from them, and or that there is a very big difference in an Andy's Girls listener or a Bravo fan or whatever deciding how in which to use their private person platform and saying, I don't really want to talk about this stuff on social media. I think that you have the right to say that. I think it's a different level of responsibility for someone who exists and has been made famous in the world of reality TV and has platforms of hundreds of thousands of people. And we are not living in normal times. And when it comes to what was a trigger for me was the idea that you weren't acknowledging the projected winner in a battle that is still likely going to be ongoing when it comes to the other side disputing the reality of a Democratic Republic election. You know, like, it's not, it is very important. It is very serious stuff. And I also say this as a woman who gets to decide how to use my voice and who is never going to respond well or in the way that others would like when I'm told how to use my voice. And I'm told that Andy's Girls is a podcast that's X, Y, and Z because the person telling me that isn't the creator. They're not me. And they're not, they don't, their opinion is just that. It's an opinion. So I have these opinions about Stephanie that and other people, many, many other white housewives and non-black housewives who have not used or taken advantage of the opportunity that they have to even do a little bit of good, regardless of who they voted for. And so we get to decide, you and I are both podcast hosts, what we want to talk about on our shows. Mm-hmm. They are, at the end of the day, our shows. So we get to drive the conversation and have these kinds of very nuanced and complicated conversations. And I just think that we are in a very different time at this point in our country. There is a lot of anger and frustration that people will continue to feel about what has happened to them even in just the last 4 years that will remain. It's not going anywhere, regardless of these wonderful feelings of elation that I think all of us should really hold on to and appreciate and celebrate, take a moment to breathe. And I think it's also important for us to acknowledge our own responsibility for many of us as Americans. I hear from international AGs every day. Shout out. Wish I was with you. But I just have to say that, like, when we have these conversations about responsibility, I may have a opinion that is different from Stephanie's, and she has every right to have that. That is, in fact, her right as an American, as a citizen living in this country. I just think that when it comes to just some of the quote unquote minutia of all of this, when there is an election that one side is trying to contest, you have an awful lot of power just in even acknowledging the reality of it.
Right.
And as a person with that kind of audience, I think that that is incredibly important. So that's kind of all that I have to say about that. And guys, I hope that everybody has taken a little bit to breathe and watch some TV. I know I'm going to watch Below Deck post haste. I actually do think I want to watch Southern Charm. I don't know why. I don't like anybody
the show. I will say, so we're two episodes into the new season now. I think it's too soon to say kind of if it's going to be a good season overall. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of changes with the cast and everything. I will say I'm more like interested to see how it plays out than I kind of anticipated that I would be.
Okay.
you know, they're going to have a lot of interesting stuff once the COVID hits. And, you know, I think they're going to at least make some attempt at tackling some of the racial issues that have been happening. So, I mean, regardless of how good of a job they do of it, there's going to be a lot going on that I think might be interesting to kind of witness them taking a stab at.
And, you know, I think a little bit about, like, what Michelle Obama said about the presidency, when it's like it, the presidency doesn't change a man, it reveals a man. And I think about, oh, I have somebody interrupting. Hold on 1 second. Okay, guys, we just got interrupted because I do an alternating every other week's a Zoom with some Jews from the States and Israel. And so there are going to be some Israeli Jews that are hopping in my Zoom room in just a second.
Oh, my God.
Wait, I think I had something. Oh, so what Michelle Obama was saying was that the presidency doesn't change a man, it reveals him. And I just think of Catherine from Southern Charm and the fact that we at one point, you know, she premiered as she did. And at one point, we had so much hope for her and how the show could maybe change her. And what I have been hearing of IRL as things are filmed, what she did with Cam and everything else, it looks like the show is really just revealing the person that's been there all along. And it makes me uncomfortable because I did have hope for her, but I guess it's going to be interesting to watch it play out. I mean, she is kind of garbage.
I think it's going to be a tough season for Catherine, and I think she probably deserves it, because already, I mean, she looks pretty shitty, and we haven't gotten to the racist stuff yet, so
can't wait. What a joy that's gonna be. On that note, I gotta go shalom to do my thing. Shout out to Siggy, who I think is also PS having a great week, and I wish her the best. I'm sure her social media has been amazing. But
you know, Sigalit wants a recount in California, which I think is an interesting strategy, but sure, she can have one if she wants.
Oh, Sigalit. Oh, sweetie, what you have done. Interesting. Anyway, talk about somebody who got revealed. Dylan Hafer, love you forever. Tell the people how to listen to Mention It All and follow both you and Bravo by Betches on social.
So you can listen to the Mention It All podcast anywhere you listen to your pods. We have new episodes every Monday, Thursday, and Friday. They're nice little bite-sized pieces of Bravo audio bliss. You can follow me on Instagram at Dylan Hafer and follow at Bravo by Betches for all of the Bravo goodness.
And guys, if you want to see a, I don't think it was shady, but a wonderful question and a nuanced question that I asked Heather Gay at the Salt Lake City little media shenanigans Zoom screener situation that Dylan and I both attended on Monday, you can do so on my social, Instagram at Dame Galley. And bonus episodes available now, patreon.com/andysgirls. Starts at $2 a month, gets you love and joy. $5 a month gets you 2 exclusive bonus episodes. $10 a month gets you 4. And then there's a premium cackle tier. If you want to do just a little kiki with me solo one-on-one, no big deal. Fun employed, so that is my primary way to pay my Con Ed, plus sometimes Time Warner. And I so appreciate all of you, especially in this time, who have supported me and supported Andy's Girls and also supported the idea that at the end of the day, regardless of how you feel about my opinion, you understand that I have the right to share it. And so I think that is the one thing that we can kind of, that big galley energy that we can take into today, November 8th. Dylan, love you. You know I die for you. Love you forever.
Love you too.
I'm going to put your Bravo bops in the show notes for this week's episode.
Oh,
so you guys should all listen. And I know I am as soon as this is done. And shout out to all the Jews that I'm going to be kikiing with in my meeting room.
Enjoy.
And let us all say to everyone but Ivanka and Jared, Shalom. All right, guys. We'll talk to you soon. Stay safe. Wear a mask. Drink. Oh, unless you don't want to. Drink tea or water. Hydrate is what I'm trying to say at the end of the day. And we'll talk to you later. Bye, guys.